Welcome to The Deep Dive, the show where we take your sources, cut through the noise, and really try to unearth the most potent nuggets of knowledge. Today, we're diving into a question that, often lingers in the cultural ether. What happens when a singular, iconic role, one that defines a generation, launches an actor into global superstardom, but then that person chooses a path far, far beyond the confines of the screen? How does such a powerful initial launch spark a journey that evolves into something, well, truly unexpected, multifaceted, and deeply personal? We're talking, of course, about Emma Watson. You know her, you've likely grown up with her, but she's proven to be so much more than just the brilliant witch of Hogwarts.
Absolutely.
She's a true multi-hyphenate force. Yes, a celebrated actress, but also a dedicated advocate for gender equality, a pioneering voice in sustainable fashion, an innovative entrepreneur, and a serious scholar. It's a remarkable journey that I think truly challenges our preconceived notions of what celebrity even means in the 21st century.
Yeah, it really does. And for this deep dive, we've pulled from a truly comprehensive source, her Wikipedia page. It's incredibly detailed, almost chronological, which gives us a fantastic backbone to trace her evolution right from her earliest days up to her most recent endeavors.
Right.
It allows us to see the trajectory of her life and career with, well, remarkable clarity.
Our mission today, then, is to truly unpack the myriad facets of her career and personal life, revealing the defining moments and maybe some surprising facts that shaped her. Ultimately, we want to understand what she represents as a public figure in today's world. We're going to explore how she expertly leveraged that early immense fame to become a powerful voice for change, how she meticulously balances her intensely public life with her equally guarded private one, and what her diverse endeavors truly signify, in the grand scheme of things. So let's embark on this fascinating exploration.
Let's do it.
So let's cast our minds back to the very beginning, long before the wands and wizardry. Emma Charlotte Duerr Watson was born on April 15th, 1990, in the romantic city of Paris, France.
In Paris.
Her parents, Jacqueline Lousby and Chris Watson, were both English lawyers. She actually lived near Paris until she was five, experiencing a bicultural childhood before her parents divorced.
Right, that divorce happened when she was quite young.
Yeah, five. She then moved to Oxfordshire, England, with her mother, spending weekends in London with her father. It's interesting to note that she still speaks some French, though she admits not as well as she used to.
Well, that early exposure to different cultures, living in both France and England, certainly laid a unique foundation. While it's not immediately obvious, you could speculate that this diverse upbringing, maybe coupled with her parents' legal backgrounds, might subtly inform her later advocacy work and her very analytical approach to understanding complex issues.
That's an interesting thought.
A formative experience that likely cultivated a more globally aware perspective from a young age,
Yeah. Perhaps
shaping her ability to dissect problems and argue for solutions, traits that, resonate with a legal mind.
That's a fascinating point about how her background might have influenced her later work. It makes me wonder if that analytical bent, combined with a creative spirit, truly set her apart. Because even at a young age, her ambition was incredibly clear. From age six, she knew she wanted to be an actress.
Age six.
Yeah. This wasn't just a fleeting childhood fantasy. She was actively pursuing it. She trained at the Oxford branch of Stagecoach Theater Arts, a part-time school where she honed her skills in singing, dancing, and acting.
Stagecoach, right. Lots of UK actors come through there.
Exactly. Before Harry Potter came along, she performed in school productions like Arthur, The Young Years, and The Happy Prince. The critical detail here, the one that truly sets the stage, is that she had never acted professionally before Harry Potter.
That's the key bit, isn't it?
Absolutely. This wasn't a child actor with years of experience under her belt. She was a talented amateur stepping onto the biggest stage imaginable.
It's an extraordinary leap, really. What's truly fascinating here is how quickly she went from those, amateur school plays to a global blockbuster.
Mm.
It's a testament not just to her raw, undeniable talent, but also to J.K. Rowling's keen eye for casting.
Oh, definitely.
Rowling herself supported Watson's casting after seeing her initial screen test, and that endorsement from the creator herself speaks volumes about the intrinsic quality Watson brought to the role, even at such a tender age.
It's almost unbelievable, isn't it? Imagine being 9 years old with absolutely no professional experience and landing a role that would not only define a generation, but launch you onto a world stage. In 1999, when casting began for Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Watson was actually discovered through her Oxford theater teacher, a sort of serendipitous connection. She was just 9 years old for her first audition and had to audition an astonishing 8 times in total.
8 times.
8 times. They even considered another young actress, Hattie Jones, for the role. This wasn't just a lucky break. It was a rigorous process that affirmed her innate suitability for Hermione.
Indeed. And the impact was, well, immediate and monumental. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, her screen debut in 2001, didn't just break records for opening day sales, it was the highest grossing film of that entire year.
Huge.
Critics were quick to lavish praise on her performance. The Daily Telegraph called it admirable, and IGN even declared that she stole the show.
High praise.
For that one role, she was nominated for 5 awards, ultimately winning the Young Artist Award for Leading Young Actress, and was named one of Entertainment Weekly's Breakout Performers of 2001. That's a truly meteoric rise into the public consciousness.
And her performance as Hermione was just getting started, really. In 2002, with Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, the Los Angeles Times praised her and her co-stars for maturing noticeably between films.
You'd really see that development.
Yeah. Though it's worth noting, the Times did criticize director Chris Columbus for underemploying Hermione, a character already hugely popular with fans.
Interesting critique.
She still won an Otto Award for that film, demonstrating her continued audience appeal. Then, with Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban in 2004, Watson really appreciated Hermione's more charismatic and assertive role.
That film was a turning point for the characters, I think.
Definitely. A.O. Scott of the New York Times highlighted her spiky impatience, noting Hermione earned the loudest applause with a decidedly unmagical punch to Draco Malfoy's deserving nose.
Iconic moment.
Totally. She took home 2 more Otto Awards and the Child Performance of the Year Award from Total Film. This period truly cemented her as an integral part of the trio, and her character's development paralleled her own growing confidence on screen.
Absolutely. By Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire in 2005, the film and actors reached new milestones in popularity and emotional depth. The New York Times described her performance as touchingly earnest, and Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian noted her gutsy, confident performance, specifically highlighting the growing discrepancy between a teenage girl's status and her accelerating emotional and intellectual development.
That's a really insightful observation.
Yeah. Watson herself found humor in the arguments among the lead trio, calling it much more realistic, which is, a sign of her evolving perspective on character portrayal.
What's truly striking here, though, and a crucial detail looking back on her career, is that she almost quit the franchise after Goblet of Fire.
Wow, really? After that one?
Yeah. She candidly admitted, "I think I was scared." I don't know if you ever felt like it got to a tipping point where you were like, "This is kind of forever now."
That's
Yeah.
incredibly powerful coming from someone so young.
Isn't it? Already grappling with the immense weight of a lifelong commitment that was essentially handed to her as a child, it speaks to a deep need for personal agency even then.
It absolutely does, and it's a theme we'll see echo throughout her life choices, definitely.
Yeah.
Then came Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix in 2007, which was a huge financial success, generating over $332 million worldwide on its opening weekend.
Massive.
Watson won the inaugural National Movie Award for Best Female Performance. The level of fame was just immense, reaching a point where she, Daniel Radcliffe, and Rupert Grint even left their hand, foot, and wand imprints at Grauman's Chinese Theater.
The Hollywood treatment.
Totally. By this time, her work had reportedly earned her over 10 million pounds, and she openly acknowledged that she would never have to work for money again. That profound financial freedom, earned at such a young age, is a truly significant factor in the choices she would make later in life, allowing her to prioritize, purpose over profit.
That's a really key point. And despite that feeling of, this is kind of forever now, that internal struggle with commitment, she did decide to stay for the grand finale.
Which must have been a huge decision.
Oh, yeah. Before Order of the Phoenix, the future of the series was actually uncertain, with all three leads hesitant to continue. Watson, in particular, was described as considerably more ambivalent during renegotiations. But she ultimately explained that while the decision was a significant 4-year commitment, she could never let the role of Hermione go, signing on in March 2007.
And let Hermione go. I get
Yeah.
that.
She then filmed Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which premiered in 2009, with critics praising her most charming performance to date.
Ugh.
The saga concluded with Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Parts 1 and 2, released in 2010 and 2011, with Part 2 becoming her most commercially successful film, grossing over $1.3 billion worldwide. It's almost impossible to imagine her not being there to complete that iconic journey.
Indeed. But while she was still deeply entrenched in the wizarding world, Watson also took her very first steps beyond Hogwarts during this period, signaling a clear intent to broaden her artistic horizons.
Right, dipping her toes in other waters.
Exactly. Her first non-Potter role was in 2007 in the BBC television adaptation of Ballet Shoes.
Ah, yes, Ballet Shoes.
The director, Sandra Goldbacher, immediately recognized her unique quality, calling her perfect for the lead role of Pauline Fossil and noting her piercing, delicate aura. It was a significant broadcast, reached about 5.7 million viewers.
Decent numbers for a TV film.
Yeah. Then, in 2008, she lent her voice to Princess P in the children's animation The Tale of Despero, starring alongside Matthew Broderick and her Harry Potter co-star Robbie Coltrane.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah, the film grossed $87 million worldwide.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, these early non-Potter roles are more than just film credits. They show a deliberate, conscious attempt to diversify her portfolio even while she was still, you know, deeply committed to the wizarding world.
Absolutely. Foresight.
It indicates a remarkable foresight about her career path beyond the franchise from a very young age. It's interesting how even these initial roles, like Pauline Fossil and Princess P, still tapped into a similar young, aspirational persona.
Mm-hmm.
They began to set the stage for her later independent projects and her continued pursuit of meaningful, layered roles, showcasing an actor keenly aware of her potential beyond typecasting.
Definitely laying the groundwork.
So, with the Harry Potter saga finally concluded, Emma Watson was ready for a full transition. It's a moment of, well, immense pressure for any child star. How do you shed that iconic skin and carve out a distinct adult identity?
It's the million-dollar question, isn't
it? It really is. She took a slightly unexpected turn in 2010, appearing in a music video for One Night Only, Say You Don't Want It, after meeting the lead singer George Craig through a Burberry campaign.
You bet, Burberry connection.
Then, her first post-Potter film was My Week with Marilyn in 2011, where she took on a supporting role as Lucy Armstrong, a wardrobe assistant. These were small but significant steps, almost like testing the waters away from the immense expectations of Hermione.
That's a classic smart strategy for a child star transitioning to adult roles, taking smaller, less pressured parts to prove range without the immense pressure of carrying a film.
Makes sense.
However, she very quickly moved into more critically acclaimed independent cinema, a move that truly set the tone for her post-Potter career.
And that's exactly what happened with The Perks of Being a Wallflower in 2012. She starred as Sam, a flirtatious, free-spirited high school senior, and this role was absolutely crucial for her.
Perks was huge for her image change.
Totally. David Sexton of the Evening Standard found her performance plausible and touching, and a reviewer for The Atlantic emphatically stated that she sheds the memory of a decade playing Hermione in the Harry Potter series with an about-face as a flirtatious but insecure free spirit.
That quote really nails it.
Yeah. This wasn't just another role. It was the definitive moment she truly proved her range beyond Hermione and firmly established herself as a serious actress capable of nuanced performances in independent film.
And her next role in The Bling Ring in 2013 continued this trajectory of bold choices. She played a fictionalized version of Alexis Nyers, one of the real-life teenage robbers.
A very different character again.
Very different. While the film itself received mixed reviews, Watson's performance garnered almost unanimous praise. Adam White of The Independent noted she proved remarkable. Watson oozes casual disdain. Her sticky American vocal fry is clipped in monotone, as if she swallowed a Kardashian for breakfast.
Huh. That's quite a description.
Isn't it? It powerfully showcased her willingness to take on darker, more complex, and even unlikable characters, further distancing her from her wizarding past.
And just when you thought her choices were all about serious independent drama, she ventured into something completely different. Here's where it gets really interesting. After those more intense roles, she took a supporting role in the apocalyptic comedy. This Is the End in 2013, playing an exaggerated version of herself.
Oh, yeah, with the axe?
Exactly. She memorably dropped the F-bomb in the film, a stark contrast to Hermione.
Definitely not Hermione.
She actually said she couldn't pass up the opportunity to make her first comedy and work with some of the best comedians in the world right now, going from serious drama to a self-aware comedic cameo that's a bold move for someone trying to redefine their image.
Very bold. Shows confidence.
Yeah. And it clearly showed her versatility, her sense of humor, and her willingness to experiment with genres. It speaks volumes about an actor not taking themselves too seriously.
Her career choices continue to be strategic and diverse, balancing artistic exploration with larger commercial projects. In 2014, she was cast as Isla, Shem's wife, in Darren Aronofsky's biblical epic Noah.
Right, Noah. That's ambitious.
Very. She referred to the role as physically very demanding and did extensive research on childbirth for a key scene, underscoring her commitment to authenticity. While the film received mixed reviews for its overall direction and casting, Vanity Fair noted she anchors the film's rawest emotional scenes. Watson is quiet but ferocious. It was a box office success, demonstrating her ability to handle big-budget projects while still delivering impactful performances.
But she also knew when to say no, which is often just as important as knowing when to say yes. A very telling decision was turning down the title role in Kenneth Branagh's live-action Disney adaptation of Cinderella.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know she turned that down.
Yeah, she was offered the part but unequivocally turned it down because she stated she did not connect with the character. The role ultimately went to Lily James.
Wow.
This decision really highlights her selectivity and a clear desire for roles she could authentically embody and feel a personal connection to, rather than simply chasing every big project that came her way, especially a guaranteed blockbuster like Cinderella.
That says a lot about her artistic integrity.
Doesn't it? It speaks volumes about her artistic integrity and a deeper purpose driving her choices.
Beyond acting, she even contributed background vocals to Ben Hammersley's song Pantomime in 2014, alongside Olafur Arnalds, showcasing yet another creative outlet.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. Later that year, she was deservedly awarded British Artist of the Year by BAFTA at the Britannia Awards. In a memorable and surprisingly touching anecdote, she dedicated the prize to Millie, her pet hamster, who died while Watson was filming Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Aw, Millie the hamster. That's sweet.
It was a moment of genuine, heartfelt connection that resonated with many, revealing a glimpse of the person behind the celebrity.
She continued to work, appearing in two thrillers in 2015, Colonia, opposite Daniel Brühl, and Regression, with Ethan Hawke and her Harry Potter co-star David Thewlis.
Right, those two were less successful, critically speaking.
Yeah, exactly. Both films received generally negative reviews, with the Daily Telegraph criticizing Regression's script for her pure dramatic cardboard role, suggesting the material itself rather than her performance was the issue.
Sometimes the script just isn't there.
True. She also appeared in an episode of BBC's The Vicar of Dibley, playing Reverend Iris.
A cameo, yeah. Then, in a truly significant and telling move in February 2016, Watson announced she was taking a year-long break from acting.
The hiatus.
This wasn't a forced hiatus due to lack of roles. She explicitly stated her plan was to spend the time on her personal development and her women's rights work.
Which is pretty unusual.
Very unusual. This raises an important question. How many actors at the absolute peak of their career, with financial freedom secured, proactively step back for personal growth and advocacy? It signals a very distinct and powerful prioritization of values beyond just career advancement and earning potential. It wasn't a forced break, but a strategic, value-driven choice that few public figures are bold enough to make.
Absolutely. A really defining moment, I think. After that deliberate hiatus, that calculated step back from the limelight, Emma Watson made a triumphant return to mainstream success in 2017 with Disney's live-action Beauty and the Beast.
Huge comeback role.
Massive. She starred as Belle and was given significant autonomy in her portrayal, a testament to her growing influence. She notably recharacterized Belle as an assistant to her inventor father, shifting Belle's narrative to one of intellectual curiosity rather than just a lover of books.
Right, making Belle more active, more of an agent.
Exactly. She even incorporated practical bloomers and boots into her wardrobe, making the character feel more grounded, independent, and less overtly feminized for a fairy tale princess.
Man, that autonomy, that thoughtful input, paid off handsomely, both critically and commercially. The film soared, grossing over $1.2 billion worldwide, making it the second highest grossing film of 2017.
Incredible number.
Her reported fee was $3 million upfront, with profit participation, bringing her earnings up to an estimated $15 million. Richard Roper of the Chicago Sun-Times praised her performance as all pluck and spunk and sass and smarts and fierce independence as Belle.
High praise indeed.
Watson herself reflected that after this film, it kind of felt like I had made that transition into being a woman on screen, acknowledging a significant personal and professional milestone in her journey.
That's a big statement for her. In that very same year, though, she jumped into a very different kind of role, starring opposite Tom Hanks in The Circle.
Ah, The Circle. Very different vibe.
Totally. Playing May Holland, a character exploring pressing themes of surveillance and freedom within a powerful tech corporation. While the film received negative reviews, it was a moderate box office success.
Didn't quite land that one.
No. She then took on another classic role in 2019, starring as Meg March in Greta Gerwig's critically acclaimed adaptation of Little Women.
Which was fantastic.
Loved it. Watson offered a nuanced feminist interpretation of Meg, stating that Meg's way of being a feminist is making the choice. Her choice is that she wants to be a full-time mother and wife, underscoring the idea that true feminism is about individual choice, not conforming to a single ideal of what a woman should be.
That's a really important point about Meg's character arc.
It is. Forbes called it perhaps the most challenging role as the proverbial straight woman who defends her conventional dreams. The film was both critically acclaimed and a commercial success, grossing over $218 million.
By 2020, her career focus was clearly evolving, indicating a conscious shift in priorities. She discussed future career plans, stating she was curious to embrace a role where I work to amplify more voices, to continue to learn from those with different experiences, a powerful statement that pointed to a future with fewer red carpets and more conference meetings.
That phrase really stuck out.
Yeah. This wasn't just talk. It was a visible and deliberate shift in her public persona and professional endeavors, moving from being the center of attention to facilitating and amplifying others.
Indeed. In 2021, reports surfaced that she was either engaged or retiring, rumors which she and her representatives quickly refuted, labeling them as clickbait and attributing her public absence to social distancing during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Ah, the classic retirement rumors.
Always happen. She did, however, reunite with her Harry Potter cast members for the HBO Max special Harry Potter 20th anniversary. Return to Hogwarts in 2022, a wonderfully nostalgic treat for fans that allowed her to revisit her roots without committing to new acting projects.
That was lovely to see. But the deeper truth behind her acting hiatus, that year-long break we discussed, truly emerged in a 2023 Financial Times interview.
Ah, right, the FT piece.
Yeah. She revealed she hadn't acted in almost 5 years because she wasn't very happy and felt a bit caged by the profession.
Wow, caged.
Yeah. This offers a deeply fascinating and honest insight into the profound pressures of prolonged public life and the relentless search for authenticity, especially for someone who essentially grew up performing. Her desire to avoid robot mode speaks volumes about the emotional and psychological toll of constantly performing and the critical importance of finding work that aligns with one's true self and values.
That robot mode phrase is chilling.
Isn't it? She stated she would absolutely return to acting, but only when it was the next right thing and where she wouldn't have to fracture myself into different faces and people. It's a powerful statement about reclaiming personal agency.
Absolutely. So what does this all mean for someone we've watched grow up in the public eye? She's not just an actor who occasionally takes classes. She's clearly a serious academic pursuing high-level degrees with unwavering commitment.
Brown University, Oxford.
Exactly. From 2011 to 2014, she skillfully split her time between demanding film roles and rigorous education, ultimately graduating from Brown University with a Bachelor of Arts in English Literature in May 2014. Her acting work meant she had to take two full semesters off, extending her degree to 5 years, a clear demonstration of her dedication.
Which is tough to juggle at that level.
Well, incredibly. She also attended Worcester College, Oxford, as a visiting student in 2011-12, and she's continued this intense academic pursuit. In 2023, she began a Master of Studies in Creative Writing at Lady Margaret Hall, and as of 2025, she's pursuing a DPhil, which is Oxford's equivalent of a PhD at the University of Oxford.
A DPhil, wow.
Yeah. This completely redefines the narrative of a child star. She's intellectually driven and committed to lifelong learning at the highest level, using her mind as much as her acting skills.
Beyond academia, her career in fashion has also evolved significantly, transforming from simply being a face for brands to becoming a true force for sustainability within the industry. She began modeling early, with a photo shoot for Teen Vogue in 2005, making her the youngest person to cover the magazine.
Youngest ever, right?
Yeah. She partnered with luxury brand Burberry for their autumn-winter 2009 and spring-summer 2010 campaigns, earning an estimated six-figure fee. In 2011, she became the face of Lancôme and was awarded Style Icon by British Elle. These were typical celebrity endorsements, but her vision for fashion quickly went deeper, signaling a shift from superficial endorsement to substantive engagement.
It certainly did. She became a pioneering voice in sustainable fashion. In 2009, long before it was widely trendy, she announced her involvement with Peopletree, a fair trade fashion brand.
Peopletree, yes. That was early days for fair trade fashion in the mainstream.
Way ahead of the curve. She worked as a creative advisor, actively creating a spring line and an autumn-winter collection. Crucially, and this detail is really important, she was not paid for this collaboration.
Not paid.
Wow.
Yeah. She articulated her motivation, arguing, fashion is a great way to empower people and give them skills. Rather than give cash to charity, you can help people by buying the clothes they make. She highlighted young people's growing awareness of humanitarian issues in fast fashion, demonstrating a deep understanding of the industry's ethical shortcomings and a desire to make a tangible difference.
This positions her not just as an early adopter, but as a true advocate, going far beyond a mere celebrity endorsement. Her unpaid work with Peopletree, driven by a desire for empowerment and ethical choices, powerfully underlines a genuine commitment beyond commercial gain.
Oh, totally.
She was actively walking the talk and demonstrating her values long before sustainable fashion became the mainstream movement it is today. Her foresight and dedication were truly ahead of their time.
Her public image in fashion has consistently reflected this deep commitment. She's been widely described as an early adopter of sustainable fashion and is noted for dressing ethically on the red carpet, using her platform to highlight conscious choices. The Met Gala gown made from plastic bottles comes to mind.
Exactly. Famously, she wore a Calvin Klein gown made from recycled plastic bottles to the 2016 Met Gala, a powerful visual statement. She actively supports the Good on You app, which helps consumers find sustainable and ethical brands by rating their practices.
Which is a great resource.
And even created the Press Tour Instagram account to meticulously detail the ethical brands she wore during her various press tours, inviting public scrutiny and education. She also guest edited Vogue Australia's March 2018 issue, dedicating its focus entirely to fashion sustainability.
Her influence in luxury fashion then became even more direct when, from 2020 to 2023, she was appointed the youngest member of the board of directors of Kering.
Kering, right? The luxury giant.
Exactly. Right? For those unfamiliar, Kering is a French luxury group that owns major fashion brands like Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent, and Bottega Veneta. She even chaired Kering's sustainability committee, moving beyond public advocacy to influence policy and strategy at the highest corporate levels.
From the inside.
Precisely. She expressed hope to influence decisions that will impact future generations and look forward to making a difference behind the scenes. More recently, in 2022, she became the face of Prada Beauty's Paradox fragrance, for which she uniquely starred in, directed, wrote, and narrated the promotional short film.
Directed it herself.
Best. Showcasing her multidisciplinary talent.
Yeah.
In 2024, she became the face of Prada's Renylon collection, their sustainable line. This is a very active, hands-on role in shaping the industry from within, aligning her commercial partnerships with her core values.
And just when you thought her plate was full with acting, academia, and fashion advocacy, she ventured into something completely new, something that truly integrates all these facets. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, what else?
Not content with just advocating from the outside or influencing from within corporations, she's now an entrepreneur. In April 2023, she launched Rene, a sustainable gin brand, with her brother, Alex Watson. Yeah. The gin is remarkably made from recycled grape skins, a brilliant example of circular economy principles, and is certified carbon neutral, embodying her unwavering commitment to environmental sustainability.
Recycled grape skins.
That's clever.
Isn't it?
The inspiration behind it connects deeply to her personal story, her childhood in France and her father's wine business, creating a beautiful narrative full of personal resonance. The name Rene, which is French for rebirth, is an ode to the Chablis wine region of her early years.
That's a lovely connection. This entrepreneurial venture shows a complete and remarkable integration of her values across her diverse endeavors. She's not just lending her name as a celebrity endorsement. She's actively building a brand with a strong ethical core.
Right. It feels authentic.
Connecting back to her French roots, her long-standing sustainability advocacy, and her interest in creating tangible, positive impact. It's a holistic approach to influence, demonstrating that her commitments aren't just intellectual or artistic, but practical and business-driven as well.
And it's already gaining significant traction. In September 2023, she and her brother won the Soho House Award for Breakthrough Entrepreneur for Renee, a testament to the brand's innovative approach and success.
Good for them.
And in January 2025, the company successfully raised $6 million for investment, a clear indication of market confidence in her vision. It's clear this is more than just a side project. It's a serious business with her values woven into its very fabric, positioning her as a leader in sustainable enterprise.
Fascinating development.
Beyond her professional and academic pursuits, Emma Watson has emerged as a profoundly powerful voice for change, particularly in the realms of activism and advocacy. She's an outspoken feminist and has actively promoted education for girls globally, traveling to places like Bangladesh and Zambia to support these crucial initiatives.
Using her platform effectively there.
Definitely. Her unwavering commitment was formally recognized in July 2014 when she was appointed a UN Women Goodwill Ambassador, a role that significantly amplified her platform.
Her role as a UN Women Goodwill Ambassador quickly led to a pivotal, indeed historic, moment in her advocacy career, the launch of the Hifoshi campaign in September 2014.
Ah, Hifoshis. That was huge.
Yeah, this was a game changer for how gender equality discussions were approached globally.
She delivered an address at UN headquarters in New York City, a speech she admittedly felt very nervous about delivering, urging men to advocate for gender equality alongside women.
That nervousness felt very real in the speech.
It did. In that powerful speech, she shared incredibly personal anecdotes, recalling how she began questioning gender assumptions at the tender age of 8 when she was called bossy, a trait she accurately attributed to simply being a perfectionist, while boys were not.
The bossy comment, yes. Mm-hmm. Resonated with many women.
Totally. At 14, she also experienced being sexualized by certain elements of the media, a stark reminder of the unique pressures faced by young women in the public eye.
She precisely defined feminism in her speech as the belief that men and women should have equal rights and opportunities, and explicitly declared that the prevailing perception of feminism as man-hating has to stop.
A clear, direct definition.
The speech made worldwide headlines, resonating so strongly that it even caused the UN Women website to crash due to overwhelming traffic.
Wow. Broke the internet.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
What's truly striking and revealing about her character is that she later said she received threats within less than 12 hours of making the speech. This, rather than deterring her, left her raging and did the opposite of putting her off her women's rights work.
Raging. That's powerful.
Yeah. This reaction is a powerful indicator of her deep resolve and commitment to the cause, which was only strengthened, not weakened, by the backlash.
That's a profound response, isn't it? This raises an important question for any public figure. How does one navigate such intense scrutiny and even threats while advocating for a deeply personal cause and emerge even more committed? Her response of raging is a truly powerful indicator of her resolve and her deep commitment to the cause, showing an unwavering courage in the face of adversity.
The speech had a profound and immediate influence. Fungzile Mlambo Ngcuka, the executive director of UN Women, famously stated that Watson's speech gave us the word back, helping to reclaim feminism from negative stereotypes.
That's quite an endorsement.
Yeah. Even Malala Yousafzai, the Nobel Peace Laureate, told Watson in 2015 that she decided to officially call herself a feminist after hearing her address. This demonstrates the immense ripple effect her platform had on global discourse around gender equality, influencing even other powerful advocates.
Amazing impact. Her engagement continued to broaden. In September 2014, she made her first country visit as UN Women Ambassador to Uruguay, where she gave a speech highlighting the critical need for women's political participation.
Taking the message global.
Yeah. In November, she contributed her creative talents, designing a Paddington Bear statue for the Paddington Trail, which was subsequently auctioned to raise vital funds for the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, the NSPCC.
Paddington for a good cause. Lovely.
In December, the Mrs. Foundation for Women deservedly named her its Feminist Celebrity of 2014, and she delivered another impactful speech on gender equality at the World Economic Forum in 2015, solidifying her status as a leading voice.
She consistently topped recognition lists for her activism, underscoring her widespread impact. She took the top spot on Ask Men's Top 99 Outstanding Women 2015, specifically for her women's rights work.
Well deserved.
And she was deservedly included on Time Magazine's 100 list of the world's most influential people in 2015, with former New York Times editor Jill Abramson praising her gutsy, smart take on feminism and her pioneering efforts to involve men as refreshing.
Gutsy and smart. Yeah, that sounds right. To further her feminist initiatives and promote education, she cited influential figures like Gloria Steinem and Maya Angelou as key inspirations.
Good influences to have.
Definitely. In January 2016, she launched a highly successful feminist Goodreads book club called Our Shared Shelf. The goal was to share ideas and encourage discussion, selecting one thought-provoking book per month.
The book club, yes, that was very popular.
It was. The first book chosen was My Life on the Road by Steinem, whom Watson later had the opportunity to interview a full circle moment for her. Although the book club ceased updates in 2020, it remains open for discussion, a testament to its enduring impact.
Left a legacy there.
On International Day of the Girl Child in 2016, she visited Malawi to meet girls freed from child marriage and traditional chiefs, using her platform to shine a light on crucial issues. She also partnered with book fairies and books on the underground to leave feminist literature on public transit for others to discover, literally spreading knowledge.
Clever initiatives. However, her advocacy wasn't without its moments of public controversy and intense scrutiny. In March 2017, she received backlash for a Vanity Fair photo shoot.
Ah, the Vanity Fair shoot.
Yes, in which one of the shots had her breasts partly visible, leading to accusations of hypocrisy from some in the media who claimed it undermined her feminist stance.
That got a lot of attention.
It did. Watson, however, was genuinely bemused and unapologetic about the controversy. She powerfully argued that feminism is not a stick with which to beat other women, but fundamentally about freedom, liberation, and equality, adding, I really don't know what my tits have to do with it.
Huh. Direct.
Very direct. This highlights her direct, unapologetic stance on personal autonomy and the importance of individual choice within the feminist movement.
That response speaks volumes about her understanding of feminism. She also openly discussed her white privilege within feminist spaces, reflecting on, what are the ways I have benefited from being white? In what ways do I support and uphold a system that is structurally racist?
That's crucial self-reflection.
It is. This shows a deep willingness to engage in critical self-reflection and a profound commitment to intersectional feminism, which acknowledges that various forms of discrimination, like race, class, and sexuality, can combine with gender oppression, creating unique challenges for different groups of women. It's a crucial step beyond a narrow viewpoint, pushing for a more inclusive and equitable movement.
Watson has also been a relentless driving force in addressing workplace harassment and advocating for global policy changes. She's a founding member of Time's Up UK.
Time's Up, right?
The movement against sexual harassment. And she coordinated its high-profile launch at the 71st British Academy Film Awards. She personally donated £1 million in February 2018 and was instrumental in setting up the Justice and Equality Fund.
Putting her money where her mouth is.
Absolutely. She even attended the 2018 Golden Globe Awards with activist Mariah LaRossi, using the red carpet as a platform for solidarity. She also assisted in establishing nationwide industry guidelines on bullying and harassment, which were subsequently implemented by the British Film Institute and British Academy of Film and Television Arts.
Real structural change work there.
Yes. In 2019, she took another concrete step, helping to launch a legal helpline for workplace sexual harassment provided by the Rights of Women charity.
On a global policy level, her influence extended even further. She joined a G7 gender equality advisory group convened by none other than French President Emmanuel Macron in 2019.
Wow, the G7 level.
Yeah. The group's mission was to call on G7 to make political and economic advances for women within their respective countries and to establish gender equality as centerpiece of foreign policy. She actively attended meetings at the historic Élysée Palace and participated in the 45th G7 summit, demonstrating her capacity to engage in high-level international discussions and directly influence policymaking.
Her social justice and environmental activism further broadened her impressive scope of impact. She voiced staunch support for transgender rights, reiterating this on Twitter amidst controversy concerning J.K. Rowling's remarks on gender identity.
That was a significant moment.
Showcasing her commitment to inclusive advocacy. In June 2020, she spoke out powerfully in support of the Black Lives Matter movement, sharing anti-racism educational resources and uploading a podcast episode interviewing Renée Etter-Lodge about her seminal book, Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race.
Using her platform to amplify other voices.
Exactly. She even partnered with Etta Lodge and the WWW Foundation to reimagine the London Underground map in 2020, renaming 270 stops to spotlight women and non-binary people who shaped the city's history.
The Tube Map. That was brilliant.
A brilliant initiative to highlight often overlooked figures.
She's also a vocal climate change advocate. She was among 400 signatories calling for the UK government to include women in decision-making roles at COP26 in 2021, emphasizing the link between gender equality and climate action.
Connecting the dots there.
Yeah. She further amplified this message by hosting a panel on climate change at COP26 with guests including the influential Greta Thunberg.
Powerful panel.
In 2021, she was part of a significant investor group funding $12.5 million into Fabric Nano, a startup developing sustainable alternatives to petrochemical products, demonstrating her commitment to concrete, impactful solutions.
Investing in solutions, right.
Though interestingly, while Swedish researchers found her CO2 emissions from flying, 15.1 tons, were three times the global average, her overall carbon footprint was still found to be the lowest among the celebrities studied, highlighting the complexities and inevitable challenges even for those actively trying to reduce their environmental impact in a global profession.
It's a tricky balance, isn't it? This brings us to a particularly sensitive instance of her activism that illustrates the complexities of a global platform. In January 2022, Watson showed support for the Palestine cause by posting an image of a pro-Palestinian protest with a Solidarity is a Verb banner on Instagram.
Ah, yes, that caused quite a stir.
It did. This immediately received strong backlash from former Israeli science minister Danny Dannon, who posted on Twitter 10 points from Gryffindor for being an anti-Semite, and from Israeli ambassador to the UN Gilad Erdan.
This is a clear instance where a public figure's advocacy steps into highly sensitive geopolitical territory. It highlights the inherent complexities and significant risks of using a global platform for activism and the widely varied reactions it can provoke, from strong criticism to widespread celebrity support.
Definitely.
It's a clear example of how personal expression can be met with significant and often political consequences, underscoring the intense scrutiny that comes with her level of public visibility. Now, it's very important to note here that we are presenting these facts directly from the source material, impartially, and we are not endorsing any political viewpoints, but simply conveying the information as it was provided.
Absolutely. To continue with the reactions, Dannon's comment was swiftly criticized by Leah Greenberg, a co-executive director of Indivisible Project, and by Conservative Party peer Saida Warsi, who both defended Watson's right to express solidarity.
Right, there was pushback against Dannon, too.
Yes. Furthermore, over 40 prominent individuals from the arts, including Susan Sarandon, Mark Ruffalo, Miriam Margolyes, Gail Garcia Bernal, and Steve Coogan, publicly supported Watson in a letter organized by Artists for Palestine UK.
A lot of high-profile support there.
Yeah. This collective support demonstrates the diverse and often polarized reaction that public figures can face when engaging with such globally contentious issues, and the solidarity that can also emerge.
Mm-hmm. Moving into her public image and maybe some more personal reflections, Emma Watson has often been cited as a role model, a title she admits she shies away from, saying it puts the fear of God into her.
Which is understandable, really.
Yeah. Yet her impact is undeniable. Her activism has demonstrably inspired teenage girls to label themselves feminists, a powerful phenomenon some in the media have affectionately dubbed the Emma Watson effect.
The Emma Watson effect, yeah.
In her initial post-Harry Potter career, her acting style was thoughtfully noted for focusing on smaller, more intimate films rather than exclusively big-budget studio productions. Adam White of The Independent described her acting as possessing a very human sensitivity and quiet strength, highlighting her nuanced approach to performance.
Off-screen, her persona is consistently described as remarkably grounded and authentic, especially given her level of fame. Derek Blasberg of Vanity Fair called her shy, friendly, intelligent, and down-to-earth.
Down-to-earth, yeah.
Gloria Steinem, a formidable figure herself, even described her as way more like a real person than a movie star. A profound compliment.
That's high praise from Steinem.
And author Bell Hooks, another intellectual giant, considered her part of a very different new breed of actors who are interested in being whole and having a holistic life, as opposed to being identified with just wealth and fame. This collective portrait paints a picture of someone genuinely striving for authenticity and purpose amidst the relentless glare of fame, prioritizing inner life over outward show.
Despite her unwavering efforts to remain grounded and authentic, The challenges of such intense lifelong fame have been immense. She has openly acknowledged the profound impact of the Harry Potter phenomenon, noting encounters with fans who have her face tattooed on them.
Wow, tattoos.
And others who use the books to get through cancer. That level of connection is extraordinary, but it comes with a price.
Huge pressure.
Yeah. The media scrutiny has been substantial and often invasive. On her 18th birthday, she was disturbingly photographed by paparazzi attempting to take pictures of her skirt.
Awful.
And she has, tragically, been a victim of numerous stalking threats. Because of these very real security concerns, she doesn't take selfies with fans, preferring instead to talk one-on-one, which actually allows for a more genuine, albeit brief, human connection that prioritizes safety and authentic interaction over a fleeting photo opportunity.
Makes sense. Financially, her success has been nothing short of extraordinary. In 2009, she ranked 6th on Forbes' Most Valuable Young Stars list, a clear indicator of her commercial power.
Top tier even then.
By 2010, she was recognized as Hollywood's highest paid female star, having earned an estimated £19 million in 2009 alone. Forbes again ranked her among the world's highest paid actresses in 2017, with annual earnings of $14 million.
Consistently high earner.
Her influence extends far beyond just acting income and box office. She was British GQ's Woman of the Year in 2013 and topped Empire's list of 100 sexiest movie stars that same year, demonstrating her broader cultural appeal. In 2020, YouGov Global Surveys ranked her as the 6th most admired woman in the world, a testament to her widespread respect and appeal that transcends mere celebrity.
6th most admired. Wow. Her personal philosophy and approach to well-being are particularly insightful, revealing a deeply thoughtful individual navigating a demanding world. In 2014, she described herself as a spiritual universalist.
Spiritual universalist. Interesting.
Indicating an open-minded approach to spirituality that draws wisdom from various traditions rather than adhering to one specific doctrine. In 2016, she was appointed a visiting fellow at Lady Margaret Hall, Oxford University, seamlessly blending her academic interests with her public role, further cementing her intellectual credibility.
The Oxford connection again.
And in a widely discussed and memorable moment in 2019, she bravely described herself as single, using the self-coined phrase self-partnered, eloquently promoting a sense of self-sufficiency, contentment, and independence that resonated with many challenging traditional notions of relationship status.
Self-partnered. That definitely got people talking.
It did.
To cope with the intense and unique fame from such a young age, she found peace by deliberately remaining rooted in her own identity. This is a very proactive and conscious approach to mental and emotional well-being that is quite rare in such a high-pressure, often superficial industry.
Proactive is the right word.
Yeah. In 2013, she even became certified to teach yoga and meditation, taking practical steps to cultivate inner peace. As part of this certification, she attended a week-long silent meditation course in Canada, specifically to figure out how to be at home with myself.
A silent retreat? Intense.
She stated that an uncertain future meant finding a way to always feel safe and at home within myself, because I can never rely on a physical place. This profound pursuit of inner peace and self-reliance through practices like meditation offers a powerful contrast to the external demands and often fleeting nature of her celebrity, highlighting a commitment to a holistic life.
You know, it's interesting. Even a global superstar faces the same everyday realities as everyone else, in a rather mundane, almost amusing detail that connects her to the common experience.
Okay.
She recently received a 6-month driving ban in Oxford for a speeding offense.
Ah, really?
Yeah. Apparently caught going 38 in a 30 zone, and it wasn't her first offense. Had her car towed for bad parking earlier, too. It's a grounding reminder that no matter how extraordinary a life you lead, some rules truly do apply to everyone.
Even Hermione gets speeding tickets. It grounds her a bit, doesn't it?
It really does. All right, and there you have it. We've taken a truly comprehensive deep dive into Emma Watson's remarkable journey, tracing her path from a child actor who captured our hearts as Hermione Granger to a celebrated actress, a profoundly committed activist, a pioneering sustainable fashion advocate, an innovative entrepreneur, and a dedicated academic.
Quite the list.
It is. We've seen how she's consistently and deliberately used her formidable platform to champion causes she deeply believes in, and how she meticulously cultivates a life of purpose that extends far beyond Hollywood's spotlight, continually redefining what success means for herself.
What's truly striking throughout her story, what unifies these diverse endeavors, is this consistent thread of self-determination. whether it's choosing specific film roles that challenge her or align with her values, taking a deliberate and public hiatus for personal development, advocating fiercely for gender equality, or even building a sustainable gin brand from the ground up, she actively shapes her narrative.
Mm-hmm.
She takes control, rather than passively letting it be dictated by external expectations or the relentless pressures of fame. Her story is a powerful testament to the immense potential of using one's influence for broader impact, all while navigating the intense public scrutiny that inevitably comes with being a global icon. It's really a masterclass in living a life of authentic purpose.
Well said. So given Emma Watson's deliberate and conscious steps to prioritize personal happiness, rigorous education, and impactful activism over constant acting, what does her career trajectory imply for the future of celebrity?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah. Will more public figures follow suit, redefining what success truly means in an increasingly interconnected and value-driven world where authenticity and purpose hold increasing weight? Or is she, in her own unique way, a compelling outlier, a blueprint for a truly different kind of stardom?
A fascinating thought to leave things on.
Something to ponder until our next deep dive.